Welcome to the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, an SB Nation blog about the Columbus Blue Jackets. I am Will Chase, joined only tonight by Eric Seeds. What's up, Seeds?
Hey, how's it going, Will?
It's going. It's March. March Madness is almost here. I can look forward to that at least.
Yeah, exactly. It was nice of the Blue Jackets to lose a two-game homestand over my birthday weekend. Thanks for the gifts there, Columbus.
That's why I sent you the apology ahead of the game Saturday, because I wasn't feeling too good about it. I did think they were going to split. For some reason, I thought they're due to win a game in Nashville, and we're going to get into this, but we know by now they can never, ever win in Nashville. And I have the dubious stat that we'll drop later. So jumping right into this thing, so I don't know about you, Seeds. I know you and a bunch of other people that I've seen on Twitter over the last couple of, well, at least over the last year or so, have been kind of shouting from the rooftop, so to speak, about maybe it's time to move on from Tortorella. And I feel like that chatter on Twitter has definitely started to pick up intensity. Now, I don't know what the overall fan base thinks. It's probably split. And I know I've been a torch defender, but even I'm like, okay, this team looks bad. I don't think the offense is being utilized the way it could be. The young players need to be able to mature, blah, blah, blah. We all know the storyline right now. The power play has been horrible for 5 years, basically. So, Seeds, yeah, it's another sweep in Nashville. And they've only won against Nashville once this year. They've dropped all four in Nashville. Luckily, they won't be back there again this season.
A team that is very clearly trying to blow it up at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Nashville, they have their own coaching hot seat rumors, it sounds like, with John Hines. But yeah, like I was saying, I feel like the chatter, I mean, even Portsline asked him the question.
Right.
It's like, it's definitely starting to pick up steam in the media, at least. And I think he and Kekalainen are going to talk tomorrow. And it sounds like the quote unquote dreaded vote of confidence.
Yeah, I obviously, anyone who listens to this podcast with regularity and anyone who reads my writing or comments at the Canon knows I am not exactly the most sympathetic to the John Tortorella coaching experience. I kind of always been on the bandwagon of this guy is getting hired. He's going to have a shelf life. And when we come up to the end of that shelf life, whenever it is, you have to cut bait sooner rather than later. There's no point in delaying what will eventually be inevitable. And it appears we've gotten to that point. While listening to the game yesterday, the end of the game, we were out walking the dog.
You didn't miss anything.
One takeaway I noticed during the third period, and I wanted to draw attention to it because I feel like it's a microcosm of the entire, everything this team is going through. Late in the game, the Jackets went on a power play, obviously down 2-1 with a chance to tie the game late. Late in the game, probably looking for offense, Tortorella swapped Seth Jones off the number one power play unit for Zach Werenski. Zach Werenski is obviously the better offensive player, but since Patrick Laine's arrived, Seth Jones has generally been driving the number one unit given Werenski's injury. The power play, while it hasn't been great since Laine showed up, it's been league average thereabouts, which is worlds better than what it's been for the last few years. The Blue Jackets won that faceoff. Nick Foligno won the faceoff, got it to Laine, and Laine threw a pass back to the blue line on that power play, expecting the defenseman to be there because it's where Seth Jones has been during this little stretch of, you know, competency from the power play. Werenski wasn't there. He wasn't expecting the pass. The Blue Jackets never, the puck crossed out of the zone. The Blue Jackets never entered the zone again. And after a bad play in the neutral zone, the Predators went the other way and scored a shorthanded goal. And that was all she wrote. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's just a microcosm of everything we've seen. Like, guys have no chemistry. There's no communication. Lines are being jumbled in critical moments with seemingly no cohesion, no communication, no chemistry, no nothing. It's like there's not really a plan, never mind game to game, period to period, shift to shift at this point. It's like, to me, it's like watching a coaching staff that has run out of answers and they're just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks at this point. Right. I mean, literally between Saturday's game and Sunday's game, you had Nick Foligno go from first line center to third line right wing literally overnight. The players aren't dumb. They can very clearly see that there's just not really a plan. There's no cohesion. There's no collective viewpoint of, like, because there have been articles on The Athletic and elsewhere of this team is trying to develop the centers, but Tortorella doesn't feel like he can develop the centers and try to win. So they're trying to play Nick Foligno and Boone Jenner at center more, but that's not really getting other guys going. Meanwhile, yesterday you had on Sunday's game in the loss against the Predators, Alexander Texier, one of the young centers you're trying to develop, who started the season on a hot point streak, played 7 minutes and 58 seconds. So it's just there's no cohesive vision for what they want this organization to be, what they want this club to be, what they want the team on the ice to be. Now, as you mentioned, Will, and I'm sure we'll get into this in a minute, Jarmo came out and said there's no imminent firing of Tortorella and that he and Tortorella are going to speak to the media and address things Tuesday at roughly 10:30 before the game against Detroit. And we can get into what that press conference means in a hot minute, but it's just, to me, this does sound like the dreaded vote of confidence, because anyone can tell, either listening or watching the game, that this team just, it not only lacks cohesion in chemistry, they just lack energy. There's no hustle. You know, you're down two to one late in the third period against a team who's taken 4 out of 5 off you at that point this year. And there's just no energy, no rush, no push. And not only that, but this team just isn't getting shots on net. We're dead. Like, I'm writing the preview for tomorrow's game, and we are literally dead last in shot share in the NHL, like at 5-on-5. We are dead last. You have to, at some point, you've got to put pucks on net to try to score. We can get into Tortorella more, but yeah, it just, I see it as a microcosm of the issue that there's just, it just doesn't look like there's a plan.
Yeah, you know, like they put like Domi on the wing and Domi or Texier and trying. They've been talking about how Domi's been struggling with the system and they want to take off the defensive pressure of playing center. And, you know, I just wonder how much of that is. I mean, I know that Domi's been like a guy like Domi's been struggling, so it might make sense. But when it comes to that, it's so easy to gloss over something like, oh, the system, so and so is struggling in this system. And Domi has said that he has played complicated systems, and I don't know. I just want to know what that really means. I wonder, like, if it's Tort specific in this case, or if they had another coach, would he gel more? I don't know. I just wonder, like, when they talk about these systems, because he's an NHL or he's been on different teams before. I really want to know what's so different or what's so complex about it. I don't know all the X's and O's behind it all.
I've obviously never played hockey. I can't skate to save my life, but I read something the other day that, like, by the time these guys get to the NHL, they've seen most systems. They know roughly what to do. So I wonder if it's more just a lack of cohesion and communication on the ice. And it really does feel like a lack of chemistry. Like, it sucks that there wasn't really a training camp for these right. guys to develop chemistry in. But it also, have we seen lines the same for more than 2 periods at this point, let alone like a week or two to develop chemistry? It's just like, you know, if you keep consistently rotating lines on a period by period basis, going with who's
right.
hot, and, you know,
right.
So suddenly Roslovic and Foligno play 25 minutes and Alex Texier plays 6. It's hard to build chemistry with anyone else out there because you don't really know what's going.
Yeah. And I do wonder how much that frustrates a player when they're playing with a guy for a period and all of a sudden it's a different guy. And, you know, they, like you said, the chemistry has got to be an issue, or the cohesion of just knowing where your teammate's going to be. But, you know, maybe it's not a bad thing. Like I was saying, like Foligno going back to the third line, but like you said, first line one day, third line the next day, jumping here and there. I kind of gloss over it sometimes, and I think they're professionals. They'll figure it out. But I think you're right. I mean,
at some level, it has to matter.
It's just like
right?
in our every. I like to try to relate it to my own everyday thing. Like, I get used to something a certain way, and then when something changes, it's like, oh, I got to figure this out. I got to learn this. It's fine. But I was grooving along just fine one way, and now I got to do it a whole other way now. So,
yeah, like you said, equating it to your
right,
own work
right.
day. Like, if I was given certain tasks that I try to do every morning by 10 a.m. and suddenly my boss drops 3 new things on me, I know I need these done first before you start any of these, and I've been doing these other tasks every day for, you know, 3 weeks before 10 a.m. suddenly, you know, it's going to throw me off, and I'm going to be a little paralyzed and have to think a little harder, and therefore everything's going to be slower and moves just slower. And it looks like this team is just, as a lack of routine and chemistry, they're just overthinking, and as a result probably pressing and trying to do too much, especially right. the young guys who yep. know if they make one mistake, yep. you know, they could be like Dean Kukin and vanish into the phantom zone, never to be heard from again.
That's my problem. So like I was saying, I've been a torch defender, but at the same time, it's like, okay, it's been 5 years. I'm tired of, I want to see progression. I do feel like, I think any coach does have a shelf life, and we knew torch going in probably had that shelf life. And I think we've hit that. And I do think now, I know in previous seasons, we've seen this team get off the slow starts, but you can't have a slow start this year in a shortened season. And that's the other thing. Why should we just say, okay, they start out slow, it's normal. It doesn't have to be normal. Just because we're used to it doesn't mean that we should just say, oh, slow start, they'll just come on a, get on a bender here at some point. Because you can't rely on that every year, especially in a short season.
Right.
And
you can't,
the condensed scheduling.
Right, we're 40% of the way through the season right now.
Right. And the other thing, too, is I'm tired of the power play. I'm tired of the same storylines. I'm tired of how boring and dull this team is. When I was doing the recap yesterday, I was thinking, why do we have to always get so used to not only the power play being bad, the offense doesn't get shots, like you said, or score, but then it's just stupid mistakes. Jean-Luc Grandpierre was saying it, you know, talking about they didn't have the urgency. Mm-hmm. They lacked urgency. Or, you know, they didn't seem desperate, or maybe sometimes they're too desperate, but you know what I mean? They don't have the urgency down late. The other thing is they score first almost every game, and they're mediocre. Their record is so mediocre. They're under 500.
But we are 6-6-4 in games we score first this year. And it's just not good enough. Like,
yeah. And I just feel like, look, Torts got this team to making the playoffs every year, which right. is great. And that's what we needed. But now it's time to take that next. It's been time, but it's definitely time to take that next step. So, and I think Torts would agree. Like, I'm sure maybe in the moment of all this going on during as a coach, he's going to say what he's going to say. But if he has time in the future to reflect back on this team and say, yeah, obviously we weren't good enough in certain right. areas. Like, he knows it. No one, like you said, the
right.
players
it's,
aren't dumb. Everybody
at
knows
some point,
what's
got to
happen.
You have
here.
To look at the results on the ice and just say, it's just not good enough. And it's in to what you just mentioned. I think I've said this before, but it is the way that they're losing that sucks, because, you know, you see the, And I have extreme problems with this past weekend, because it just looked lazy and lethargic and unmotivated, and that looks to me like a room that is just
yep.
checking out, and you cannot have, right. at that point you have to make a change. Do I think getting rid of John Tortorella makes this team a do I think this makes them the Tampa Bay Lightning? No, I do not. I can recognize reality, but I can also but. Could it, you know, maybe loosen a couple guys' sticks and they play a little freer, and, you know, maybe a couple of the young kids gain a little more confidence to play through a mistake, knowing they might not get banished to Cleveland for 3 solid weeks or ride the taxi squad? Like, I think those are reasonable expectations if the coach leaves. You know, guys might play a little freer. But to your point about just how they're losing, I think that what irritates me the most is how predictable it is. It just every loss that this team has suffered this season has felt very similar, in that they score early, they have defensive miscues, they play poorly in the neutral zone, they give up a bad goal on either a rebound or a blown defensive assignment where guys are spinning around, you know, due to a lack of communication or a lack of just a defensive awareness from certain players on the ice. And then they allow an empty netter or a bad goal late, and that's that. It's basically how this team has lost all year. And like I said, we're 40% of the way into this season, and it is, you know, we're gonna get to Yarmo and his incoming press conference here shortly. Yeah. But man, it is getting late early in Columbus.
I don't necessarily expect a mid-season coaching change, and I don't know if it's just the thing I think about mostly with that is that. If the coaching staff is all taking pay reductions and all that with this whole pandemic, I don't know how much that plays into it, but that's what I'm thinking. I don't know who they would, I don't know what their situation, I don't know what they would want to do. I don't know if they would want to go to an interim coach right away or have a guy ready to like, you know, when they went to Torch the first time or when they went to name whoever. I know they've had interim coaches. They had Gerard Gallant in the past. Could you see him coming back as a coach? I think he's going to go to like Seattle or something.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up in Seattle, but it would be awesome
funny,
to
yeah.
have him back. I totally agree with your point that I don't have, given that it was reported that the coaching staff is operating at a 20% pay reduction, I don't honestly expect there to be a coaching change. I don't think it's in McConnell appetite and Mike Priest's wheelhouse to pay John Tortorella to not coach, even if it was just, you know, to bring in an interim basis. I think they're just going to play out the string and whatever happens, happens, and maybe let Tortorella ride off into the sunset this summer.
That's what I'm
financially
thinking, yeah.
I don't think they have the appetite to do it. Do I disagree with that? Yes, because of what I mentioned earlier of them, of the players and the lack of energy and effort I saw on the ice. That to me is the most concerning thing. That's why I would make the change, because I don't want to. I personally don't want to watch 30 games of guys just going through the motions like that. Like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's boring. It's boring. I'm glad me and you both have NHL TV, and it's great watching other games, not just Blue Jackets right now.
So we are recording this on Monday night at 7:20. I cannot wait for Edmonton-Toronto at 10 tonight. I am ludicrously excited for that hockey game.
It's funny to me when Edmonton gets shut out or loses a game when you have Connor McDavid and Draisaitl and McDavid alone, but you know.
So I've mentioned before, and do you have thoughts? I want to hear your thoughts before I give mine. What do you have thoughts on the incoming press availability of Kekalainen and Tortorella tomorrow?
Well, to me, it's kind of notable because I feel like they're talking because they know that this is a thing right now. Like, Portsline asked the media, or asked Torts, I should say. He asked Torts this. Like I said, I saw I've been seeing chatter pick up on Twitter. Now, that doesn't say much, but you know what I mean? It's a thing. It's a topic. People are starting to think about it and talk about it. So the fact that Kekalainen and Torts is talking also, right? The fact that they're even going to talk about it just shows you that they know they have to address it, or they feel the need to address it. Anytime that the GM is going to talk about something in season like that, it's sort of saying, look, they may not be firing him, but it's like they know what's happening. They see the reality of what the situation is right now.
Yeah, I agree. Like, there was speculation Saturday evening. Friedman was talking about it on Hockey Night in Canada, that there's speculation that Columbus is getting restless. Right, I think his quote was getting restless. There have been other speculations. The fourth period put out today that David Savard and Nick Foligno could be trade deadline bait. Yarmo is a patient man in certain scenarios. Other times he's obviously very much not. But he's willing to, you know, let things play out and see what's going on. So the fact that he is coming before the public to talk about what is happening and what is going on with John Tortorella's future, I think, is notable. I think it's just that dreaded vote of confidence that so often precedes firing, or maybe precedes the inevitable retirement of Tortorella and the parting of the ways this summer, where Yarmo brings in a new coach to kind of take this group on the next step after Tortorella did so much to raise the profile of this organization to, you know, consistent playoff contender and pest and the thorn of so many sides. I am very, very interested to see the tone that Yarmo takes, the tone that Tortorella takes. Obviously, they can't come out. They're going to come out and they're going to be disappointed, because we're all disappointed. Fans are angry. Fans are taking to Twitter and just saying, like, how much more of this can we possibly take? We all see the signs. We all see this team struggling. We all see them making mistakes and gripping sticks too hard. Tomorrow should be a very interesting day in the world of Blue Jackets hockey. In a season that has been a lot full of headlines. You know, we've had the PLD drama, the Patrick Laine trade, and now we've got this team on a 5-game losing streak, where if they don't beat Detroit tomorrow, they've got an upcoming slate that's not going to be kind to them. This team has been the top headline on NHL.com a lot this year, and we've always asked for more media coverage, but maybe not in this way.
What gets me about the Jackets, we're going to talk more about the upcoming games against Detroit and Dallas, but I just cannot get over the fact that this team literally cannot win in Nashville. The last time they did was when they had Duchesne and DeZingle and all those guys before they swept Tampa. One of the last games of the season they won in Nashville. They have 9 all-time wins in Nashville. And mind you, this team, they were division rivals for more than a decade, and they have 9 all-time wins in Nashville. I think they have more wins in Detroit than they do in Nashville. I mean, talking about when Detroit was a dominant team, it's insane.
Yeah, I went to a game in Nashville. I did the Jacket Backers road trip, and I actually, you know, I took a bus down to Nashville. We left the morning of the game. I took a bunch of Jello shots on the bus. We were drinking on the bus, and we got down there. And then they beat the Preds in that arena. It was really cool. Sergei Bobrovsky was outstanding. I want to say it was like 2014.
Okay. back in it. That might have been their second to last win in Nashville, for all we know. I mean, that team, I swear, it's insane how much they get dominated there. And against them overall, but especially in Nashville. Like, what is it about that place? It's got to be psychological at this point, for the most part. I mean,
I believe it was 2013. They beat Nashville 3-1 in Nashville. Yeah, I don't know what it is about Nashville. I don't know if they're afraid of country music. I don't know if they, you know, spent too much time on Broadway the night before, or spend too much time at the stage or wherever. But yeah, it's something about that city that in my entire life watching this team from the days of like Jordan Tutu way back in the day has just collectively owned this hockey club. Like the GM of the Predators, I don't remember his name off the top of my head.
David Poile.
Yeah, he can't build a Stanley Cup winner, but he can build a team to collectively destroy the dreams of Columbus Blue Jackets fans.
You know, it's funny. They haven't won a cup, but they've gotten there and they've had a lot of playoff years. And
he's the only GM in that franchise's history. It blows my mind.
Right. 20 plus years. Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. It's wild that we can't beat the Nashville Predators in Nashville. It's like, it feels like it's rare that we actually beat them here.
They'll play Detroit Tuesday night, and then they'll play two against Dallas in Dallas for the first time this year. I don't know if you saw it, but I did a podcast with Max Baltman of The Athletic. He covers the Red Wings, and we were talking about the two teams, and he was talking about how Detroit was terrible on the power play, struggling offensively, and I was like, are we talking about Columbus or Detroit? Because there's so many similarities, it seemed like, between the two teams. Detroit actually picked it up a little bit. They got blown out last night in Chicago, but they split two games there. But coming into that series, they had some wins against the Predators of all teams. So they actually split with the Nashville and they split with Florida. Wow. So Detroit actually lost 7-2 to Florida on the 19th of February. They lost 7-2 yesterday, but then they had a couple of wins in between. So they're kind of, they have more wins in their last five than Columbus does, put it that way. So I don't think Detroit's a gimme. The way Columbus is playing right now, and Detroit's coming off a horrible loss, so they're probably going to be mad anyway. I don't think at this point, Columbus is only 4 points ahead of Detroit in the standings. I wouldn't say any game is a gimme for Columbus at this point.
No, I wouldn't either. I've been writing the preview, looking at stats and stuff, and like, Detroit's a better shooting team than that. Granted, Detroit is better at volume shooting. They can't buy a finish. They're a worse finishing team than us. They can't. If we think Columbus is bad on the power play, Detroit's like 8% on the year this year. They're like 8.8%. They cannot buy a finish with the man advantage. Bobby Ryan leads their team in scoring with like 12 points. Right. And he's been a nice pickup for them. You know, he'll probably get flipped at the deadline for a pick, which is good. You know, Detroit's a rebuilding squad. They need all the picks they can get, so they can sign a vet, have him put up some numbers and flip him to a team that needs a finishing second liner. Yeah, it's good for them.
They also have Thomas Greiss, and I feel like Greiss has kind of had his way with Columbus, although I'm looking that up to see.
Yeah, I don't think this Columbus team can take Detroit for granted. Detroit's a proud organization that's got a lot of nice history that's fallen on tough times, but I see a team that was in it for a while against that Hawks team last night. They ended up losing. The score is worse than the game was, because Detroit put up 21 shots on goal in the first period in that game. Detroit, you know, was right there. It was 2-2 after, or it was 1-1 after the first period. Detroit was right in it, scored a power play goal, make it cut into Chicago's lead. But, you know, the defense just kind of fell apart, and Thomas Greiss ended up breaking his stick over the crossbar in frustration at the end of the game. But
wasn't it 2-1 after one?
Was it 2-1? It was close. Regardless, it's not like Columbus is held with Chicago all that often this year. What terrifies me the most is, you know, for all the talk about how bad Detroit has been lately, first of all, they had more wins than we did last week. Second of all, one more. If Detroit beats us tomorrow night, they're within a game of Columbus. They're within 2 points of us in the standings. So that's real bad, because Detroit was expected to be horrific this year. People thought Columbus could contend for a playoff spot, and right now we are closer to the bottom of the division than we are closer to fourth place. That's just not good enough.
Detroit has 7 wins this season. Thomas Greiss has one of them. He's 1-11-3. But against Columbus in his career, Thomas Greiss is 10-9. And he has a 280 goals against with a 908 save percentage.
The stoppable force.
Detroit's
going to
have a horrible loss. Columbus isn't playing all that well. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Detroit wins tomorrow. I guess we'll see, though. There will be fans in Nationwide Arena for the first time. So for what that's worth, maybe they'll get some kind of spark from that. I don't know. But poor fans.
Credit to you, brave fans who are paying to go see this crap live.
That's what I'm thinking. So before we close out, we'll talk about the Dallas Stars also on tap for the rest of the week. It's two games in Dallas. That's another team that they're Columbus is ahead of them for now.
Are the Stars bad?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I know that they had a lot of games postponed, so, you know, they're in last place, but they've also only played 16 games versus 23.
Did you know that the Dallas Stars started this season 4-0 and have only won two games since that? Did you know that?
That's crazy.
Or are they just a victim of because not only were they stopped for COVID and they just started late, but then they had the whole Texas power outage where they didn't play. Like,
it's funny too, because they actually had those games were actually postponed due to COVID protocols, but it may as well have been for the Texas power outage and all that stuff anyway with what was going on. But yeah, they're in last place. They do have only 16 games played this year, but still 16 games, 6-6-4. You would like to think that, okay, they're a last place team. Columbus should be better than them and beat them. But I think this is a situation where, again, Dallas may or may not really be worse than Columbus. But even though the standings might say that, we know what Columbus has been, as we were talking about all podcasts. And Dallas, we know that they have some weapons. They destroyed Columbus a couple of weeks ago in Columbus. So they split the two games, but yeah, that's another one. I think looks can be deceiving in this case.
Right. You know, Joe Pavelski remains terrifying. That was a good signing for them. And they're last in the division by points, but if you look at points percentage, which I remain convinced that's how the NHL is going to have to end up seeding the playoffs. If you look at points percentage, they're still ahead of not only Detroit, but Nashville and Columbus. So they're getting points, and they might have only played 16 games, but they, I guess, are looking all right when they do it. They need to find a little more consistency, not only in their play on the ice, but in like their actual schedule. But I don't think this is a bad team. I think they need a little jolt of confidence. And if they get a reeling Columbus, like even if Columbus goes to overtime or a shootout and beats Detroit, like it's a win in the books, but man, it can't build that much confidence. And then to go to Dallas, like it could be lights out on the season for Columbus. The Athletic has our playoff chances at 4% right now. Micah McCurdy at Infinite Math on Twitter or at Ineffective Math on Twitter has our playoff chances at 13%. Like, Columbus could be going there with like the entire hopes of their season on the line. And if that's not motivation for Dallas to just put the nail in the coffin to jumpstart their, not only jumpstart their campaign, but just end Columbus's season, it could get real dark real early before the 50% mark here in Columbus. So we got a big week ahead of us here.
I'll close out on a positive note. So every year we talk about the Blue Jackets being pathetic, it seems like, at some point early in the season, and I count them out and I'm saying how this is bad, this is boring, and then they turn it around. So like we were saying earlier, you can't rely on a slow start and then just getting hot later. They have done that, and I even said before this season that I learned my lesson and I won't count them out. So even though I feel like counting them out, I guess I won't, but we know it's late because of the situation of this season. So yeah, they better win two of three games this week, if not all three.
I'll close out on a positive note as well. You know what? We all talked about how Seth Jones was having a slow start to his year and he didn't look all that great. You know what? Jones has 11 points in his last 13 games, including points in 9 straight. You know what? That's a positive for Blue Jackets fans. Seth Jones is finally rounding into form. So there we go.
Exactly. Yeah, he had a bad January, but
he's finally recovered from playing about 195 minutes in one game against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's exactly right. With last summer and then the weird, you know, the off season in October and November instead of playing games, it's just weird.
Right, because remember in the bubble he was coming back from a broken foot, so he came back from a broken foot, played approximately every single second of that bubble, and has now finally recovered. So Seth Jones finally rounding into form just in time for him to play out his contract year and make all kinds of money.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Be sure to follow us at CBJ Cannon on Twitter, Facebook. Go to jacketscannon.com, read our previews and recaps and articles and all kinds of fun stuff. But we'll see what Columbus does this week. Maybe they'll surprise us, get a couple of wins, they need to, and we'll just see how it all plays out. But we'll be back next week, and thanks again for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
Subscribe to the Canon Cast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you can catch every episode. Leave us a review and a rating, and as always, we welcome your thoughts and feedback. Go to jacketscanon.com for more Blue Jackets coverage from us, and follow us on Twitter at CBJCanon. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Pearlie and Howlin' Moons. Check out angelapearlie.com for more music and show dates.